talk to you all today about this research that I've been doing with Adam Aviv and Jonathan Smith. And so today I'm going to be talking about giving a presentation about our paper titled Bridging Data-Related Challenges in Evaluating Large-Scale Collaborative Security Systems. And this research, this project, kind of grew out of research that we were doing on collaborative intrusion detection. And at some point, what we found was that we were spending a lot of time kind of trying to get our hands on and analyzing the kinds of data that we needed to evaluate these techniques and systems. And so we took a step back and we asked the question, well, we're facing all of these data challenges. Can we actually maybe work towards identifying the data challenges that are specific to this domain, what their effects are, and if there's any way that we can work towards overcoming them? So before we talk about data challenges, we should define the domain that we're talking about, the kinds of systems that we're working on. So in our research, we're primarily interested in collaborative cybersecurity systems. So these systems are based on the idea that modern threats like worms or botnets or DDoS attacks are distributed across the vast and dynamic internet. And so if we're defending against these threats from the perspective of an individual network, we only really get a limited amount of information about the threats that we face. But if networks share data and collaborate, they can build a more complete picture of kind of what's going on, facilitating better defense. So there have been a handful of systems that over the last 10 years have been proposed and kind of show the potential of taking a collaborative approach to large-scale network security. In the paper and in this talk, I'm going to be mentioning these three systems specifically. These are the three systems that we looked at in our research. And these systems all share one important attribute, and that's that they analyze large volumes of data. They analyze data that comes from many different networks. And so if we're going to advance this promising domain of collaborative security for large-scale internet defense, we need to obtain evaluation data. We need to obtain data that we can use to do experiments and test the systems and designs that we're coming up with. Now, obviously, kind of the gold standard is live data. We would like to, as researchers, kind of build a system and test it on real data. Of course, this is challenging, and it's not always feasible, but more importantly, there are challenges specific to working with live traffic, some of which we've talked about already in this workshop, challenges like privacy concerns, legality concerns, ethical concerns. And these challenges really affect how we do our research. They make reproducibility difficult in many cases, for example. Of course, there are alternatives to working with live traffic. We can work with repositories and publicly available data sets. We can use simulation tools. But these alternatives also have their own unique challenges. Repositories are challenging to work with because many times they're anonymized or filtered and contain data that's not really right for the experiments that we want to do. Simulation tools are often difficult to work with because they may not be designed to model the properties of the traffic that we're interested in testing. So no matter where we get our data, it seems like there are going to be these challenges to working with. But when we look at these different sources that we can acquire our experimental data from, there's kind of an interesting dichotomy. And that is, working with live data, live traffic, and working with repository data have challenges based on policy, privacy, legality, ethics, anonymization due to concerns about privacy and legality. There are all kinds of policy issues. The issues of working with simulation tools, on the other hand, are design issues. The simulation tools that are available to us were designed for specific domains, not necessarily for evaluating large-scale or collaborative cybersecurity systems. And so they're not really a good fit for our domain. Now, this dichotomy is important because design issues we can actually work towards. And so this suggests to us that maybe if we want to kind of overcome the data issues of working in this domain and kind of produce better experiments, we should maybe think about designing simulation tools specifically for our domain of large-scale collaborative security research. And so that's kind of the space that this paper and this presentation work in. What are these kinds of data challenges that we face in working in this domain? How do they affect our experiments and our research? And can we actually design better simulators to try and overcome these data challenges? So to get a better understanding of how these data challenges affect the experiments that we do, we're going to start by looking at some experimental ideas, some properties of evaluations and research and experiments that we would like our data to support in kind of an ideal world. After looking at that from a kind of theoretical perspective, we'll look at case studies of the three previously mentioned large-scale collaborative security systems and kind of see how this interaction between data and experimental ideals plays out in practice. Next, we'll go back to the promise of simulation and examine specifically the challenges that we face in working with simulation tools in this domain. Finally, we'll conclude by introducing and discussing some preliminary results of a prototype simulator that we've been working on, designed specifically for this domain of large-scale collaborative security experimentation that works to overcome some of these challenges. So, to start, to get a better idea of how these data challenges affect our work, we thought about some of the ideals, some of the properties that we want our research and our experiments to have. And kind of based on personal experiences in our own work, we came up with these four experimental ideals. And we don't believe that these ideals, these properties, need to be achieved in research for the research to be worthwhile. We don't even believe that these are always going to be achievable in our work. But we do feel like these are kind of ideals that are worth striving for in the research that we do. Reproducibility allows us to build on previous or existing work in our newer systems and techniques. Experimental control is important because the internet is large and dynamic, and there are many factors that can affect a large-scale system. Ground truth is important because it allows us to measure the accuracy of the systems that we're working with. And evaluation at scale is important because the systems that we're talking about in this kind of collaborative cybersecurity domain are very large scale. And the algorithms that they use oftentimes perform differently at a large scale than they do at a small scale. So let's think about how these experimental ideals interact with the data sources that we can use, and how these data sources offer kind of different levels of support for these experimental ideas. So, if we're working with live data, as I mentioned, it's often very hard to reproduce results when working with live data. If I evaluate my system using kind of a proprietary live data set, it's probably going to be difficult for other researchers to acquire a similar enough data set to reproduce my results. And this is, again, because of privacy and ethical and legal concerns. At the same time, live data doesn't offer much support for evaluation at scale, because, again, it's very difficult to acquire live data in many cases. Live data does offer some support for experimental control and ground truth, because if we're lucky, we may have access to the hosts and information about the traffic that can allow us to determine ground truth and determine the factors that we're in the areas that we pick. Repositories, as was discussed in the previous presentation, repositories are often very large scale. And so they give us the opportunity to evaluate our systems and techniques at a very large scale. They also offer reproducibility to some extent, because many of the these repositories are open, accessible, or easy to kind of, hands on. However, repositories generally offer filtered, anonymized data sets, and this makes determining ground truth very difficult. This also kind of limits experimental control. Simulation-based tools, on the other hand, seem like, in theory, they offer support for all of these experimental appeals. After all, if we have a simulation, we can kind of share configurations and parameters that we use to set up the simulation. We can directly control the factors that influence our system. We can know kind of, what innocuous traffic and what malicious traffic is being generated in our simulation. And to some extent, we can validate our large-scale simulations against reality, though that is more difficult. So, in theory, these different data sources kind of offer different levels of support for these experimental ideas. So let's look at a couple of case studies of somewhat recently proposed systems to see how this interaction between data source and experimental ideals plays out in practice. So first, I'd like to talk a little bit about how we do the blacklisting system. Now, this technique is a collaborative blacklisting service. And these services generally operate in a similar way. So participating networks will submit intrusion detection or firewall or snort logs, for example, to the collaborative blacklisting service. The service will analyze the IP addresses and poorly labeled logs, and then return lists of malicious or potentially malicious IP addresses to the collaborating networks and possibly to other networks so that they can block these IP addresses in firewalls or similar technology. And most collaborative blacklisting services are based on the idea of security assessment. So they're based on the idea that we want to find attackers that seem like they're performing port scanning behaviors or seem like they have IP scanning behaviors. And the kind of innovation of the highly predictive blacklisting system is that it analyzes not only severity, but also relevance. It's based off of the idea that not all attackers target all networks. And so if we kind of try to correlate attackers with networks, we should be able to produce better blacklists. Now, to test their system, the authors of the highly predictive blacklisting system used a large-scale repository from eShield.org. It was very large-scale. It contained over 15 million intrusion detection system alert logs coming from over 1,000 networks with over 10,000 unique IP address sources. And so the question that we're interested in with respect to this evaluation and this data set is, how well did the use of this data set allow these researchers to achieve these experimental ideals in their experiments? And we looked at the paper, and really because they used the repository, they had great reproducibility, and they evaluated their system at a very large scale, but due to the kind of lack of detail of intrusion detection system logs, and the lack of detail in the repository that they used, they weren't able to determine ground truth. And experimental control was somewhat limited to statistical techniques rather than kind of directly varying the factors that they were interested in. And so, in a paper version of this talk, we go into detail about two other systems. Autograph, a collaborative worm signature generator, and an internet-scale anomaly detection technique. At the same time, I'm just going to summarize what we found in going through these systems. We found basically that the evaluations of these systems, their ability to achieve these ideals was very dependent on the data sources that they used. Autograph was evaluated using a mixture of live data for some experiments and simulation-based data for other experiments. And so they were able to balance between all of these experimental ideals. Internet scale detection technique used only live data. And so that really limited the reproducibility of their results. And so So kind of the question that comes out of this is, well, we see that, you know, these data sources affect how we do experiments and how we can achieve these experimental ideals. And simulation seems to have this great potential for achieving these experimental ideals in our domain. So why isn't it kind of used more in practice? And why are we not kind of seeing, you know, more simulation-based experiments? And to answer that question, we looked a little bit at existing simulation tools. And I think there are really two classes of simulation tools that currently exist. And neither is really right for evaluating these large-scale collaborative security systems. Traffic generators model properties of the traffic itself, properties like timing, bandwidth, packet size distribution, jitter. And these properties affect collaborative security systems, but they're not really the features that these systems discriminate on. Furthermore, traffic generators usually generate dummy packets. And so they're not really useful for evaluating collaborative security systems that often do deep packet inspection or payload analysis. Virtual test beds, on the other hand, another kind of class of network simulation tools, like Mininet and S3, these tools allow us to generate traffic that contains payloads, but they require really detailed, specific configurations. You know, when we're using these systems, basically, you have to kind of define at the process level exactly what each of your connected devices is doing. This makes configuration difficult when we're talking about a very large scale simulation, but this also makes validation difficult because these low-level models are difficult to validate at such a large scale. And so what it seems like it comes down to is neither of these classes of tools are really right for the kinds of questions and kinds of experiments that we're doing to evaluate these large scale collaborative security systems. And so kind of as a step in the direction, and so if we're going to think about designing security simulators, simulators specifically for this domain, first let's kind of think a little bit about what are the properties that we would want this simulator to have. And so I would say the first property that we would want it to have is, well, we want a simulator that can generate large-scale traces, simulate many thousands of networks even, and we want a simulator that can generate traffic that contains payloads, because that's important for many of the kinds of systems that we're talking about. Ideally, we would like this simulator to be based on models that kind of model the properties that are important to collaborative security systems. And we would like these models to be kind of at a high enough level that we can quantitatively validate them by comparing them to other real measurements that maybe are not that useful for directly analyzing the systems that we're working with in these experiments. So as a first step in this direction, we've been working on a simulation technique that we call parameterized trace scale. Basically what this technique does, and the idea behind this technique, is that we take a small scale trace that's accurate in that it represents real traffic, but not of a large enough scale to be useful to evaluate systems in this large scale collaborative security domain, and then we scale it up so that it fits kind of a user provided statistical profile at a large scale. In a little bit more detail, basically what our technique does is it takes payloads from the small scale input trace and then it replays them in a larger scale simulation where all of the important flow level attributes such as source, destination, application, and payload are determined with two kinds of user provided parameters. First, distributions that define how frequently each possible value for each of these attributes occurs or should occur in the generated simulation. And second, correlation parameters that define how correlated the different attributes should be. We go into detail a little bit more about the technique and about the kind of benefits and downsides of it in the paper, but what I would like to do is, instead of talking about that, discuss some preliminary results that are not in the paper that we've kind of approach since the paper was written. So what we did to try and validate the system so far is we looked at the highly predictive block listing system evaluation. And as I previously mentioned, this evaluation was a very large scale evaluation. It was 15 million alert blocks collected from thousands of networks. And this is one of the results from their paper. And it basically shows that it shows the advantage of using the highly predictive block listing system over another collaborative block listing service. And so we see that the benefit is skewed positive, indicating that more systems benefited from using the approach. And we see there's this kind of peak around 0 to 1 or so. And so what we did was we took a small scale, single network trace, and we used our simulator to scale it up to approximately the level of the highly predictive block listing evaluation. And then we ran it through both of the systems and kind of regenerated this graph. The graph that we generated after kind of playing around with the parameters and distributions used is on the right. And what this shows us is that we can take this parameterized trace scaling technique and we can take a small single network trace that would otherwise not be relevant to researching an SMA, and we can use it to get kind of qualitatively similar results to this very large scale evaluation. So this is promising for a number of reasons. First of all, small scale traces are easier to work with, they're easier to acquire and to analyze. And this means that reproducibility is potentially enhanced when we use this technique with a small scale trace. And it also means that ground truth is enhanced when we work with this technique, because if we have a small scale trace, we may be able to analyze it more or study it further to better determine ground truth. Because we scale the trace up with these statistical parameters and models, we get kind of more experimental control. Furthermore, since these models are easier to validate against reality, we kind of gain a little bit with respect to evaluation at scale. And so, kind of in conclusion, these collaborative techniques show kind of really great potential for large-scale internet security. There are many questions that we'd like to ask, but the data sources that we use present challenges. And these challenges affect how we do our experiments. And really, it seems like it comes down to a question of policy versus design. Policy-based challenges for working with real data, design-based challenges for working with simulators. We can overcome design-based challenges, or at least we can work towards overcoming them. As a first step in that direction, we've designed this parameterized trace scaling simulation technique, specifically for this domain. And preliminary results kind of show that it's effective, or it can be effective for evaluating these large-scale systems. But more importantly, these preliminary results and our prototype system itself shows that working to design simulators specifically for this domain is actually an effective technique that can seemingly make our experiments better, more ideal, and also make this domain of research more accessible. And that's all I have. We are presenting a poster on this on that Thursday's poster session. So if you're interested, please stop by. Thank you all for listening. That's all.
Can you define how you use the word reproducibility? Because it's not clear to me if you mean that just run the same test again and you want to get identical results. And then, so maybe
explain that. So this is something that I actually spent a lot of time thinking about. And I think the best way to describe maybe what you're talking about is reproducibility versus replicability. Do we want to replicate exactly the same results, or do we want to reproduce the results in a different set? And I think that what it comes down to is either of those would really be useful and be an improvement over kind of the current state where we have these proprietary data sets that are not, you know, we can't replicate the results because nobody is allowed to share their data sets. And we can't reproduce the results because it's very difficult to get your hands on these kinds of large-scale traces that you need to evaluate these systems in many cases. So there is a difference, I think, between reproducibility and replicability. But ultimately, for the purposes of the challenge that we face, I think both are kind of important to support.
So if I understand, so that this is a practical problem about access to data. So you said use the words real world data a few times, which to me means the live data.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking that maybe the way you use the term reproducible might be slightly different than, say, a natural scientist, where they would run an experiment, someone else would then run a similar experiment, and should reach then the same conclusions. Is the difficulty you see that if you run on some stretch of live data, and then you come back later and run on the actual stretch of live data, you find something different?
That's a good point again. I don't really think that that's the difficulty. It's more about the fact that, you know, if you can run it on high data as a designer of a system or technique or whatever, that's great. But other people are going to have a hard time acquiring similar enough kind of data set to even work towards reproducing your system. If you're talking about experiments that kind of require live data.
Can you define ground truth, what you actually mean?
I would define ground truth as the knowledge of which kind of records are malicious, which are not malicious in the data set that you're working with. It depends largely kind of upon the system that you're trying to evaluate, I think, but...
So do you mean tagging? Because I mean, in the...
I'm sorry?
You mean tagging of the data?
Yeah, I think tagging the data.
Because normally ground truth has something to do with reality. So if I look at this, your classification, I mean, simulation is nothing to do with ground truth because you are inventing the simulation. So it's a serious methodological flaw to claim that simulation is something to do with ground truth because you are inventing it. Basically, well, in your own words, you were saying, well, you know, we click a little bit of parameters, and at the end it works. So it's very strange to use the word ground truth for simulation. Ground truth has never been used to establish with simulation to benchmark real-life experiments. I think it's a methodological flaw to use this word for this. If you want to use controlled experiment, that's fine, but ground truth is really the state big one.
Okay, so I think that, you know, I guess even when we're talking about simulation, I would say when you're talking about simulation, ground truth is definitely what I mean is kind of a subset of experimental control. But I think that it's an important enough distinction
for just experimental control.
Also, when we're talking about the technique that we've been working with, it's based on taking a real trace and scaling it. So there is ground truth even in hand.
The real trace, the ground truth, not your simulation. In your example, you pass from one hit count plus one, which is ridiculous, to a bit more because you adjusted the parameters. So that's the logic of the data. I mean, in your simulation, you can do it. That's why it's not ground truth. That's why it's simulation.
Maybe we can get that discussion offline. I'll just have one more question. Who wants to ask?
For this parameterized trace scaling, I understand that you can scale one data trace, but how applicable is this to other kind of data trees? Because we know there are many cases not necessarily even scaled up.
Right, so I think that's a good point, and kind of the effectiveness of experiment and your experiments will always depend on what your input data trace is. I guess the answer is we're not really sure how broad of a set of input traces this technique can work with. But the idea is to take these traces that are small scale and so would never really be applicable to this domain and kind of at least make it so that some of them can be used to evaluate systems in large spaces.